பதியம் பார்த்தாய பிரதிபூதிதாம் பகவதா நாராயணேன ஸ்வயம் வ்யாசேன க்ரதிதாம் புராண முனினா மத்யே மகாபாரதம் அத்வைதாமிருத வர்ஷிணீம் பகவதீம் அஷ்டாதசாத்யாயினீம் அம்ப த்வாமனுசந்ததாமி பகவத் கீதே பவத்வேஷினீ நமோஸ்துதே வ்யாஸ விஷால புத்தே புல்லார விந்தாய தபத்ர நேத்ர ஏனத்வயா பாரத தைல பூர்ணஹ பிரஜ்வாலிதோ ஞானமய பிரதீபஹ ப்ரபன்ன பாரிஜாதாய ஸ்தோத்ர வேத்ரைகபாணயே ஞானமுத்ராய க்ருஷ்ணாய கீதாம்ருத துஹே நமஹ சர்வோபநிஷதோ காவோ தோக்தா கோபால நந்தனஹ பார்த்தோ வத்ஸ சுதீர் போக்தா துக்தம் கீதாம்ருதம் மஹத் வசுதே வசுதம் தேவம் கம்சசாணூரமர்தனம் தேவகீ பரமானந்தம் கிருஷ்ணம் வந்தே ஜகத்குரும் பீஷ்மத்ரோணதடா ஜயத்ரதஜலா காந்தார நீலோத்பலா ஷல்யக்ராஹவதி கிருபேண வஹனி கர்ணேன வேலாகுலா அஸ்வத்தாம விகர்ண கோரமகரா துரியோதனாவர்த்தினி ஸ்தோதீர்ணா கலு பாண்டவைரணநதி கைவர்த்தகக்கேசவஹ பாராஷரியவசசரோஜமமலம் கீதார்த்தகந்தோத்கடம் நானாக்யானகேசரம் ஹரிகதா சம்போதனாபோதிதம் லோகே சஜ்ஜன ஷட்பதைரஹரஹ பீபீயமானம் முதா பூயாத் பாரத பங்கஜம் கலிமல ப்ரத்வம்சின ஸ்ரேயசே மூகம் கரோதி வாசாலம் பங்கும் லங்கயதே கிரிம் யத் க்ருபா தமஹம் வந்தே பரமானந்த மாதவம் யம் ப்ரஹ்மா வருணேந்திர ருத்ர மருதஹ ஸ்துன்வந்தி திவ்யேஸ்தவைஹி வேதை சாங்க பதக்ரமோபனிஷதைஹி காயந்தி யம் சாமகாஹ த்யானாவஸ்தித தத்கதேன மனசா பஷ்யந்தி யம் யோகினஹ யஸ்யாந்தம் ந விதுசுரா சுரகணாஹ தேவாய தஸ்மை நமஹ. சதாசிவசமாரம்பாம் சங்கராச்சார்ய மத்யமாம் அஸ்மதாச்சார்ய பர்யந்தாம் வந்தே குரு பரம்பராம். So, we've entered into the central theme of the fourth chapter in these verses, beginning from the 18th up to the 24th. Why is this the central theme? Because it not only covers Jnana Yoga, because of which it happens to be the central theme of this chapter. So, it's the essence of the fourth chapter. But this also happens to be the essence of the entire Gita. So the essence of Jnana Yoga is the essence of Gita. It is the essence of all the Upanishads, right? So, and Karma Yoga is prescribed only to come to Jnana Yoga and absorb this message. So this is a very, very profound portion, right? And we saw in the 18th verse that, you know, there was such an elaborate build-up to get into the 18th verse. And we felt somewhere that if Lord Krishna was actually complicating it by presenting it in a paradoxical language. But it's just that for a beginner, this may appear difficult to grasp. When we keep on reading again and again, gradually it will become clearer, right? So that is why if you see, Gita is actually not meant for one-time study. But we have to just keep going round and round, right? Some of the students in Swamiji's class, when we meet and when we discuss, we always seem to think that, you know, we seem to get better and better with each of the cycles, the second time, the third time, the fourth time, etc. Now, the other day I was actually discussing with Dr. Soumya as to the approach itself that one could take to the study of Gita, right? Now, there may be some Sanskrit pundits here or Sanskrit students who might want to understand just the word meaning, right? So if you take the 18th verse that we did, the word meaning would have got completed in less than 20 seconds. Okay, even with the Anvayam, it might have taken 1 minute. Whereas the philosophical meaning is very, very deep. So you have a choice of whether you focus on the pronunciation, the Sanskrit words, and, you know, just learn the verbatim meaning, or you keep that aside and, you know, learn the Vedantic or the deeper meaning. Now, there is no one way to it. According to me, in my own personal journey, I feel all of these are essential. In which order you do, I guess it depends on person to person. Now, apart from this, if you have a good grasp on Sanskrit, as well as you have gone through Vedanta for, say, 9 to 10 years, then when you study Gita Bhashyam, you really start enjoying and seeing the viewpoints of Shankaracharya. And of course, there are a lot of later Acharyas who have written Vartikams on the Bhashyams itself. So you can go on and on and on, like you sort of peel the onion layer by layer, right? So each time you sort of go through Gita, the understanding seems to get better and better, right? So we completed the 18th verse last class, but considering that it is a pithy verse, or it's one of those verses which is called a granthi shloka. Let us do a quick recap. I know you would remember a lot of the examples that I talked about, but the relevant portion is how the example relates to our subject matter, which is Jnana Yoga, right? So these were some of the topics that we covered when we had to go before we went into 418, right, which was the pithy verse. So the verse itself is on the next slide. Since I had already covered that in the last class, I just thought I will come to the, you know, the meaning and the points, the important points. So just to recap, karmanya karmaya pashyet akarmani cha karmayaha sa buddhiman manushyeshu sa yuktaha krishna karma krita. Right? So we saw that kavayaha even informed scholars who are experts in all other branches of Shastra, even they are confused regarding the spiritual significance of these two words, karma and akarma, right? So from the trap of samsara, you will be liberated only if you understand the spiritual significance of these two seemingly innocuous words, right? So we also understood what ahankara was. If you remember, we said ahankara is stula sukshma karana shariram plus borrowed consciousness, and we saw the moonlight example in detail. So you might remember that I was talking about how it is not the original light, but it is reflected sunlight. So it is borrowed light, which is moonlight, right? And I also, to reiterate this point, I said just as we see moon rise from the earth, if somebody were to be on the moon, they would see earth rise, and they would call this earth light, right? Because it is the reflection of the sunlight, right? So all of these is borrowed sunlight or reflected sunlight. So the borrowed consciousness is also very similar to that of moonlight, and a very common example often quoted. And I also said if somebody has to borrow something, then there should be a original lender. So Atma, the original consciousness, is the lender, right? Lender of consciousness. And I gave you an example of electricity and fan. And I also said electricity by itself is of no use, fan by itself is of no use, both are required to function. So in terms of Atma and Anatma, there is an Atma which is Jada Tattvam or Achetana Tattvam, and you have Atma which is blessing the Jada Tattvam, which is the Anatma. Anatma by itself cannot function because it needs consciousness to bless it, and Atma by itself cannot engage in any transaction. So we also went in to see the features of Atma and Anatma. You may recall one big list we saw that, right? So we saw a whole list of Atma features and Anatma features also. And we said Vedanta says that this Ahankara, which is stula sukshma karana shariram along with borrowed consciousness, it is the karta, the doer of good and bad actions. This ahankara alone is bhokta, which will reap the result of good and bad action. And this ahankara will travel from one loka to another loka, taking the punarapi jananam and punarapi maranam cycle. Right? So ahankara is karta, ahankara is bhokta. Ahankara is associated with punya papa karma, and ahankara will take rest in between its actions, right? So ahankara is in the waking state, which is the jagrat avastha. It will go into swapna avastha, and it will also go into sushupti avastha or deep sleep state. So when the ahankara takes rest, enjoying temporary inaction, then it comes out and it does involve itself in temporary action, right? So in the waking state, ahankara is associated with temporary action and temporary inaction. Thus, when we are awake, we are associated with action. When we are asleep, we are associated with inaction. Again, there is action. So thus, ahankara is continuously associated with action-inaction cycle, right? And we also saw a very important point that ahankara is the visible component, but in and through that there is a life-giving principle consciousness, which is the lending consciousness, which is called Atma. Then we also saw the features of Atma. We said nityaha, nirvikaraha, nityaha is eternal, nirvikaraha, changeless, satyaha, independently existent, ekam, one, sarvagatam, all pervading, aprameyaha. Somebody asked specifically what is aprameyaha, unobjectifiable, that is aprameyaha, and akarta, abhokta, which was the focus of the 18th verse, right? And very interesting to note that Atma and Anatma have absolutely contrasting features, and Krishna is focusing on just one contrasting feature here, which is existing between Atma and Ahankara, which is the Kartritvam. Right? Wise man is aware of Atma and its higher nature, so which is associated with permanent inaction. Right? And having understood both components, he can use the word I to mean anyone. In the Vyavaharika plane, if he wants to talk to you and me, when he says I, he means I the person. Right? But when he wants to abide in his real nature, when he wants to be in peace, he will claim the real nature, which is Atma. Right? But it is a long journey from claiming Anatma to Atma. Wise man knows that his real nature is Atma. And he knows that Ahankara is a Vesham. Right? I discussed the role of, you know, how there is a green room and we are playing different roles in this cosmic drama. And Bhagavan wants several actors with several costumes. So Ahankara is the costume that we put on for the drama. And during sleep state, no drama takes place because we are in the green room having kept aside the Ahankara. Right? So Atma is my real nature. Ahankara is a Vesham, a costume. And Atma is Akarta, associated with permanent inaction. Ahankara is Karta, associated with temporary action. All this we saw last week. Considering that it's really abstract, I thought it's important to connect back the examples with what we saw. Then we also saw the movie example, right? When we are absorbed in the movie, in the motion picture, we generally forget that behind all the movements, there is another stable factor right in front of our eyes, but which we don't take note of, which is a non-participant in the movie, non-active in the movie, but very much there where the movie is going on. What is that? That is the screen, right? So in fact, really speaking, characters are not there at all. They're just light and some figures moving, right? Which are moving light and shadow, right? So that is the Akarta Abhokta part. What is there in that? It is the screen, right? If only temporarily we decide to get out of the movie where there's a lot of crying and everything happening and focus on the screen, right? Then you see that screen, the innocent screen, which does not move at all, is not affected by the villainy of the villain, nor the nobility of the hero or the tears of the heroine. So none of them have any connection to the screen. And if you are able to disassociate yourself during the emotional experience that you are having and focus on the screen or abide in the screen, then you get peace out of it. So since the screen does not participate in the movie, right, it does not directly participate in the movie. So the screen is a stable, permanent fixture. Now, why cannot we remove it? One can ask, right? But it is a non-participant, but without the screen, there is no movie. Jnani enjoys the movie called life. He also cries, he also eats, he also walks, right? He plays different roles as, you know, and if it is a sannyasi jnani, he might, you know, be having ashram. He may be conducting classes, etc. If he's a grihasthanyani, he may be a father, he may be a child, he may be in an office, or he may be a chief minister or a prime minister or any of these, right? So any character he can play, but this is all a movie. He enjoys the movie called life, right? So Ahankara is the movie character and Atma is the screen. I also said Dakshinamurti Stotram opens with this paragraph, Vishwam Darpana Drishyamana Nagari Tulyam Nijantargatam. Darpana Drishyamana Nagari Tulyam. That is, it is compared to a reflected city obtaining in a huge mirror. Shankaracharya dismisses the whole thing as an image, a reflected city in a huge mirror, the entire Jagrat Prapancha. Right? So we saw all of this. And other than this, you may also recall that we discussed this the tennis match, right? What was the tennis match? The tennis match in the dream. Suppose you are lying on the bed, right? A person is on the bed, and in the bed he is dreaming, and he is able to see a tennis match, and he is seeing himself playing tennis. And in between two tennis matches, there is inaction, right? Now, with respect to the person who is sleeping on the bed, everything is permanent inaction only. Neither did he participate in the temporary game that he played, nor in the temporary rest that he's taking between two games. But from the dreamer's perspective, he's a tennis player who is actively playing and trying to win the match. And during the temporary inaction, a very, very important point that I made, during the temporary inaction, when he is at rest, he is actually thinking about potential action. So I talked about how he will be thinking about how he needs to play the next set, right? So potential action is what is in the form of temporary inaction. And I also talked about how when we meditate, sometimes a lot of thoughts with respect to the future or the past keep coming up, right? That example also I gave you, right? So we saw that there were two examples. One was of the dream itself and just lying on the cot. And the second one was that of the tennis player, right? And he remembers, right, that I am a tennis player in dream, and when I am taking temporary rest, that temporary rest also belongs to the dream person only. Imagine that the guy who is lying on the bed knows that he is dreaming. This is a hypothetical situation, right? So he knows that the temporary rest also belongs to the dream person only, and the waker is beyond the temporary activity of the dream tennis player. The waker is beyond the temporary rest also of the tennis player. The waker is beyond temporary rest, temporary action, right? Both of them. This is the message Lord Krishna gives. Jnani remembers, I am in permanent relaxation as Atma. The Ahankara has got temporary action and temporary inaction, right? So we saw the meaning of this. So he who sees actionlessness in the action, and he who sees potential action in the inaction, is wise among men. He is a yogi who has accomplished everything, right? Akarmani cha karmayaha, we saw that, right? So we completed verse 18 in the last class. Considering that it is a very, very abstract topic, I thought I must spend some time in recapping the whole thing, right? So, Jnani wants to claim akarma and not ahankara's akarma. Jnani wants to claim atma's akartritvam, right? Which is not temporary but permanent, right? Very, very important. And Dayananda Saraswati Swamiji, as I said, clearly says that you are an actor, right? And with many roles. In the green room, you are an actor without any of the roles, right? An intelligent person among humans, buddhiman, is one who is not lost in these multiple roles. He does not forget his real nature, which is the Atma, right? He alone is a person of fulfillment, right? So this is what we talked about, and he said, as an ahankara, you will have so many roles in which you would have not fulfilled some of the duties. So he very emphatically says, Dayananda Saraswati Swamiji, Pooja Swamiji, that Purna Ahankara is an oxymoron. It does not exist at all. Jnani has understood it long before. Purnatvam can come only by associating with Atma, not Ahankara. Because at any point in time, in one role, if you have Purnatvam, in some other role you will have Apurnatvam. That itself is, I think, extraordinary. If you have Purnatvam in one role, most likely you will have gradations of Purnatvam or Apurnatvam in multiple roles, right? So after claiming the Purna Atma, the Jnani uses the Ahankara for fun. And as long as Ahankara is alive, let it do a lot of things. Don't expect Purnatvam to come from the world, right? Without expecting Purnatvam to come from children or grandchildren, right, which can be a greatest disappointment, discover Purnatvam. This I found a very, very practically useful advice discover Purnatvam during raising children, enjoy the raising, bringing up of the children without hoping to get Purnatvam through them, right? Enjoy each day as it comes, whether it is your role as a parent or whether it's your role in your office or for that matter, any role that you play, right? And that is the mindset of a jnani. That is why some people have mistaken notions about a jnani, you know, that he should be sitting in a corner with a red, orange colored dress and just doing tapam all the time or, you know, doing puja all the time. No, not so. He can indulge in loka sangraha or he can decide to be contemplating all the time or he can be actively involved in doing whatever he wants in the society, right? Depending on his guna, sattva guna, rajo guna, whatever is for the mixture, he will act as per that. Okay. Now, the following six verses are commentary to this shloka. Very, very important shloka. So, now comes the explanation. Yasya sarve samarambhaha. Yasya sarve samarambhaha. Kama sankalpa varjitaha. Kama sankalpa varjitaha. Jnanagnidagdha karmanam. Tamahu panditam budah. So, will a jnani act in this world after jnanam? Because he has already discovered purnatvam or fulfillment. Will he act in this world or not? Lord Krishna says, why not? He can certainly be active, right? The best example being Lord Krishna himself. Jnani also will be active exactly like Ajnani. And if both of them are active, what is the difference? The difference is certainly not external, not how he uses his hands, how he uses his legs, right? Whether, you know, Jnani will eat with his, instead of mouth, with his nose, nothing like that. No external difference. It is only internal. So, what is that internal difference? Ajnani acts for Purnatvam, right? So, he wants the children to grow in such and such a manner. Only then my life is made, right? Children should do this, children should do that, right? So, Ajnani's Purnatvam, he hopes to get from outside. Therefore, there is a desperation. Sometimes you can see that parents even get extremely wild with children and resort to corporal punishment. Children don't do what parents want them to do because their activity in a way is their own and it is not concerned, connected with my fulfillment, right? So, an ajnani in general acts for fulfillment. Therefore, fulfillment is a future event. I am desperately hoping to get fulfillment, right? Now, once children are settled or even, you know, grandchildren are settled, at some future, my duties will get over, right? We believe, the Ajnani believes that Purnatvam is from outside, right? So, Ajnani acts for Purnatvam. This is defined as samsara. Jnani also acts not for Purnatvam, but with Purnatvam. Just a small proposition change. So, Jnani acts with Purnatvam. So, one acts for Purnatvam, another acts with Purnatvam. So, for means samsara, with means moksha. So, since Jnani is full and complete, he does not have any personal desires for himself. Because desires come when I am apurnaha. I have a desire without which I feel apurnaha. Right? When I'm already purnaha, I don't miss anything. Why should I have a desire personally? So, jnani does not have any personal desires. Now, this is a very, very important point. And I think Swamiji advises a lot of people about this, especially grihasthas, right? If there are personal desires, right, as a parent, right? Now, we are talking about children who are very well educated. They are on their own after the age of 20. We are not talking of getting children married at the age of 9 and 10, right? So at that stage, right? So what should you do as a grihastha? What is the advice, right? So Swamiji clearly says, there is nothing wrong in expressing your personal desire with your children. Now, there are two options. First of all, they may listen to you, or they may not even listen. They may not even give you an ear. If they listen to you, it is fine. You have expressed your preferences. Whether they act in accordance with that preference or not is something that as an ajnani on the journey, spiritual journey towards jnanam, must try and develop over a period of time through repeated shravanam, mananam and nididhyasanam, right? So there's nothing wrong in grihasthas having desires, but they should only be expressed as a preference, right? And Swamiji often gives this example, right? There are South Indian sannyasis and North Indian sannyasis, right? So in a lunch hall, in the breakfast, suppose puri and idli are served. So it is perfectly okay if the South Indian sannyasi jnani goes towards the idlis and the North Indian sannyasi jnani goes towards the puri. That's fine. But it is a preference. If it is available, yes, fine. Otherwise, he does not miss them also. Right? So that is the key difference. If it is fulfilled, wonderful. If it's not fulfilled, also wonderful, because they have no connection with his Purnatvam. So Lord Krishna here says, Sarve Samarambaha. Samarambaha means all the activities of karma here. Kama Sankalpa Varjitaha. They are without personal desires, right? But he does it for what then? For the benefit of the world, Loka Sangraha. So if he is a householder, he might do it for the household or family, right? He will do something. He does not have an expectation. Right? The expectations come when I desperately want that to happen. But there is no kama here. He is free from personal desires. So he has got Loka Sangraha Icha. Remembering the third chapter, we studied about Loka Sangraha. We also studied about Raja Janaka's example there. Without personal binding desires. So personal expectation is not there, or binding expectations are not there. That is a more appropriate term. Right? Now, in today's world especially, many parents have this problem with changing times with respect to the marriage of children. Should it be according to Indian tradition, Western tradition? What kind of partner? We even have started using the term partner now. Right? And the argument is that the children, they say that they are going to live with their partners. They think that the parents really have not much to say, because it is not like the earlier times, right? Whereas the Indian tradition has always been a marriage between families, right? So all the more grihasthashrama people need Gita and, you know, Upanishads to first of all get prepared for our own future, to face these kind of ups and downs. The unexpected can happen, and if we are not ready, it can be a problem, right? So, because you can have different kinds of expectations, right? Now, so for instance, even there are some parents who feel that the children will benefit out of attending Gita class. You cannot force them, right? Just because you go to Gita class, you cannot expect your children to attend, right? So when they grow up as a child, you can expose them to various cultures, Hindu culture, religion, rituals, etc., right? But beyond that, it depends on what they are, because they are exposed to further things, various different types of culture as they grow up, study, friends, etc., right? So Gita becomes absolutely important, right? So we should be prepared for our prarabdha to unfold. This is the warning that Swamiji constantly gives, and he says many parents come to him and complain about it, right? And we also see as we bring up children, their own likes and dislikes, etc. So, kama sankalpa varjitaha means too much expectation from family members, from children, etc. Do your best, give your suggestions. Do not have these kind of expectations. They may accept and follow, or they may not, right? So therefore, Jnanagni Dagda Karmanam, right? Since he does not have an ahankara, the ego, because he is associated with the Atma, and it is not, the actions are not governed by personal desires or likes and dislikes, his karmas cannot produce punyam or papam. Karmas can produce punya papam only when they are backed by ahankara, right, with personal ragadvesha. Very important, okay? So, jnanis don't have ahankara, abhimana or ragadvesha, right? Swamiji gives the example of a policeman who's driving a crowd, right, away based on his boss's orders. He's not going to attract any papam because he's driving away the crowd, right? So, because he's not acting out of his personal raga or dvesha, right? So, one of the important laws in karma is, karma can produce punya papam only when ahankara is behind him. That is why animals do not have punya papam. They don't have ahankara, hatred, etc. They just live according to instincts. Therefore, Krishna says, jnanis don't produce agami punyam or agami papam. Jnanagni dagda karmanam. In fact, God is acting through the jnani. He is an instrument for the God. Such a person is a wise person. Panditam budaha tamahuhu. He or she is called a wise person by the sages. Panditam budaha tamahuhu. Means he or she is called a wise person by the sages. Continuing. Tyaktva karma phala sangam. Tyaktva karma phala sangam. Nitya tripto nirashrayah. Nitya tripto nirashrayah. Karmanya vipravuttopi. Karmanya vipravuttopi. Topi naiva kinchit karoti saha, naiva kinchit karoti saha. Right? Now, Swamiji gives this very interesting example for searching for the searching for a thing in the wrong place, right? So he says, in the Gita class, one day in some class, 1 hour, he was teaching, saying, okay, verse number 20, page number so and so, verse number 21, page number so and so. So at the end of the class, one lady came up and said, Swamiji, I located the chapter, I located the verse, I, you know, searched, but whatever you were chanting, I could not find, right? So Swamiji was very much intrigued. So he said, okay, show me the book, I will see. So instead of Srimad Bhagavad Gita, the title read Srimad Bhagavatam. Okay, very few letters were different, right? And in the initial word, there's very few. So for 1 hour, obviously, she was searching the chapter and the verse in the wrong book, right? Why did he give this example? He said, this is samsara. Looking for the wrong thing in the wrong place. Purnatvam is not in the world. It is inside, within ourselves. Right? The Purnam is inside, like a korakattai. Inside. Korakattai is that sweet that we make, right? So the Purnam is within the korakattai, internal, not outside, right? So, very, very important. So, therefore, he talks about looking for the Purnatvam in the right place, and samsara is because you're looking for Purnatvam in the world, right? So Lord Krishna says, who is this jnani? Nitya triptaha, right? Even while reading, it is so enjoyable, means ever contented. With what is he ever contented? He's contented in life all the time. Nirashrayaha, not depending upon external factors for Purnatvam, right? That is nirashrayaha. The moment I depend upon external factor, that emotional dependence becomes raga, right? And it becomes risky because there'll be a sense of insecurity. I'm always afraid what will happen to that person, that object. So my purnatvam depends on the existence of that object or that person. So raga will lead to bhayam, and insecurity cannot be avoided because my comfort depends upon so many favorable factors. So Jnani is one who does not depend on this. He is able to accept the fact of life. What is the fact? The fact is external factors are subject to arrival and departure. In chapter 2, if you remember, this was referred. There was a technical term for this. Agama Payitvam. Subject to arrival and departure. And we said Atma is Anagama Payitvam, right? So we said Atma is beyond arrival and departure. So external factors are subject to arrival and departure. I don't want to lean on anything for my security and comfort. I depend upon myself. Therefore, Nirashrayaha. He will enjoy the presence of things, but he's not afraid of losing the things because things are subject to loss. He knows this, right? So whatever we gain is subject to loss, right? So whatever worldly activities Jnani indulges in, it is for Loka Sangrahatam. It is not for his own personal desires, right? Very, very important point. He might have personal preferences for food or, you know, the language he wants to speak, etc., right? Very important. And in this context, often Swamiji quotes this prayer called the serenity prayer, right? O Lord, give me the serenity to accept what cannot be changed. Give me the courage to change what can be changed. Give me the discrimination or wisdom to differentiate what can be and what cannot be changed. Therefore, all choiceless situations, Jnani accepts without resistance. That without resistance is the important factor. Therefore, karma phala asangam. He is not obsessed with the result for his action. So if Bhagavan asks him for a choice, he will choose. Suppose Bhagavan asks us, right? What is the choice, right? We will always choose only success. So we will say, I want success. But in the case of Jnani, he will also say, I want success, but I don't mind failure if that's what I deserve. So karma phala asangam means there is no obsession, taktva, without being obsessed with the result, right? He does what he has to do according to family designation, duties, corporate designation, right? Social designation, etc. Now, whenever I speak about this aspect in my the corporate seminars, immediately, whether it is, you know, a management session at IIM or anywhere, the supervisors or the managers or the management comes up to me and says, how can we promote a culture where the results, right, are not important? No, what we need to understand from this is, by focusing on the process to achieve the results, which means enjoying the entire journey, and because you treat it with Ishwararpana Bhavaha, the entire planning and execution you focus on with excellence. Therefore, the result is a natural extension to your process. Now, beyond this, you must remember that there are factors working. It is not only you and what is visible to you, right? So it prepares you to accept a different kind of result also, right? Very important, because definitely when we are in our work life, as well as even with children, we do not want a fatalistic attitude, right? Very, very important. The role of free will cannot be, you know, ever overstressed. It is important that we follow the karma yoga way of life, and which means Ishwararpana Bhavaha. So we enjoy and execute with excellence whatever we do, right? Same with children also. Now when we raise the children, we do our best. They may be grateful, they may not be grateful. Sometimes they can be critical also. Most children will always criticize the parents for, you know, some aspect or the other. You might have thought you did 100 things, there will still be another 100 things that you may not have done, right? So very, very important. So enjoying the time with them and spending them in a good manner is more important than unnecessarily having expectations, right? Karma phala sangam tyaktva karmanya vi pravrittaha. Jnani does not drop his duty. He never neglects his duty. He is fully engaged in doing what he has to do. All the time remembering ahankara is karta and bhokta, I am the Atma, which is a Karta, a Bhokta, and he does not forget that life is a drama with Ahankara Vesham. He does not forget because he remembers Naiva Kinchit Karoti Saha. Saha Naiva Kinchit Karoti. He is not doing anything. From a Jnani Atma standpoint, it is this Ahankara that is doing everything. It is the Vesham that is doing, right? So, remaining ever satisfied and independent and renouncing the attachment towards the result of the action, he never performs any action, though very much engaged in action. Right? This is the meaning of this verse. Continuing. Nirashiryata chittatma, nirashiryata chittatma, tyakta sarva parigraha. Tyakta sarva parigraha, shariram kevalam karma, shariram kevalam karma, kurvannapnoti kilbisham, kurvannapnoti kilbisham. Now, the Vedic tradition prescribes a series of sadhana to become a jnani. The sadhana being Karma Yoga, Upasana Yoga and Jnana Yoga. The Veda also points out there are different types of lifestyles, right, to do appropriate sadhana. Broadly, scriptures talk about what? One is Grihasthashrama, another is Sannyasashrama, right, about which we talked in the third chapter. These are two types of infrastructure. One is conducive for Karma Yoga. Which one? Grihasthashrama. Because you need money, you need power, you need manpower, you need instruments, you need of course a spouse, right? And it is for doing a lot of karma. What karma? We said Pancha Maha Yajna, right? So for doing that, like an industry requires an infrastructure. First of all, it should be within the city, within city limits where manpower is available. You have enough power, everything, and it will be a noisy place, right? You can never see a quiet factory, right? Whereas, suppose you go to a research center or a university, right? A person engaged in research, what does he require? He does not require manpower, noisy machines, etc. He requires a quiet place where he can think deeply for contemplation. So, libraries are available where he can study. In the library, what do you see? Silence, right? So, one is an active, noisy life and another is a quiet, contemplative life. Infrastructure for Karma Yoga is different. Infrastructure for Jnana Yoga is different. So, Veda says two lifestyle options are there. Householder's life or monastic life. Veda says that considering that these are optional ones, a person can choose a lifestyle according to the temperament, and therefore there are some people who don't want to go to Grihasthashrama at all. So they go straight from Brahmacharya Ashrama to Sannyasa Ashrama, right? They go through all the sadhanas. There is another option in which a person takes to Grihasthashrama. Remaining in Grihasthashrama, a person can pursue Karma Yoga, Jnana Yoga, etc. Right? So, who's an example for this? Janaka Raja. We studied about him. The first option of sannyasa lifestyle is any of these same as acharyas, like Adi Shankaracharya himself. Now, there is a third one. Enter Grihasthashrama, follow Karma Yoga, renounce Grihasthashrama and go to Sannyasashrama and follow Jnana Yoga. Thus, Grihasthashrama alone, one set follows. Sannyasashrama alone, another follows. Third one follows initial Grihasthashrama and later Sannyasashrama. So, there are three possibilities here, right? This is called Vikalpa Samuchya. Vikalpa means you take to one, don't enter the other. Whereas, Grihasthashrama and then later on Sannyasa Ashrama, that is called Samuchaya. So, the first two are called Vikalpa, which means sticking to only one of the two. The third one is called Samuchaya. In our Vedic Parampara in Upanishads, you can see many such examples. The famous one that comes to my immediate recall is Yajnavalkya. he's a grihastha ashrama, grihastha jnani, but he is seeking permission from his wife to take up sannyasa ashrama, right? So these are the various permutation combinations that we can have, right? Now, so it is exactly like some people complete all their studies and then take up employment. Some take up directly employment, right? And some can, you know, come back to studies. Exactly like this. But these are the only three that are permitted, right? These three different options. So Lord Krishna says, whichever option you choose, I don't care, right? It is your choice. You want to get married, but you have to go through karma yoga and then only come to jnana yoga compulsorily. You don't want to get married to pursue spirituality, right? That you shouldn't do. You want to get married to do your duty, and at the time of Shashtita Purti, it is actually supposed to be a time to turn, right? So, it is the transition from one lifestyle to another. That option is there. But whatever be the options, you should go through all the yogas and become either a grihastha jnani or you should become a sannyasi jnani. Right? Whether you are a monk or you are a householder, you have to go through the sadhanas as appropriate for that ashrama. Therefore, Krishna wants to talk about both types of jnanis. Right? A householder jnani for people like you and sannyasi jnanis also. Right? So, Lord Krishna talked about a grihastha jnani, right? By saying in verse 20, he spoke about grihastha jnani. By saying karmani abhi pravattaha means what? As a householder, you could be busy doing your family duties. First round of babysitting, second round of babysitting with grandchildren, etc. Right? We all do that. Now, verse 21 and 22, Lord Krishna wants to talk about the other jnanis. Which is the other jnani? The one who is a sannyasi, no wife, no children, no earning, no bank balance, right? No possessions, nothing is there. Whenever he wants bhiksha, he asks some householder. Whatever they give as bhiksha, he takes, right? There also they take different vows, very, very important. They might take a vow saying, I will ask bhiksha in three houses. If I get, it is fine. Otherwise, that day is Ekadashi, that's all, okay? Some decide to ask in three houses, some in five houses. There are some people who will not even ask for bhiksha. That is a vow. They live in some corner under a tree. If somebody comes and gives, they will take. Now, there's something very interesting which is talked about in Uddhava Gita. There's something called Ajakara Vritti and Madhukara Vritti. Two types of sannyasis, okay? Madhukara Vritti is like a honeybee, right? So, there is a type of sannyasi class which is like honeybee, which will go from flower to flower and take a little bit of honey. Similarly, the sannyasi does not want to burden one family. He will take a few food from few families. So, this is honeybee lifestyle, right? The other one is python lifestyle, right? Which is Ajagara Vritti. He does not go in search. It keeps, how does a python work? It just keeps its mouth open. And some rat or small animal, thinking that it is safe heaven, enters and then falls into the mouth, right? So, it's not that the sannyasi will keep the mouth open or something. It is just that if Bhagawan wants me to live, somebody will come and give me food, right? So, thus Lord Krishna wants to talk about the sannyasi jnani in verse 21 and 22. So, he says parigraha means he has very less possessions, tyagaha. He has renounced all the possessions, nirashi. He is without any desire at all. Ashihi means desire. So why he does not have desires? Because he does not miss anything in life. If at all he has any prayer or thought, these prayers or thoughts are what? Sarve bhavantu sukinaha, sarve santu niramaya. That's the only thing that he remembers. So if anybody comes and asks for jnanam, he shares whatever knowledge he has. His thoughts are for the blessing of the world. Yata chittatma, with total self-restraint. Chittam means mind. Atma means body here. Okay. In this shloka, atma means body. Right. With body and mind totally restrained, his mind does not entertain any worry about the future. Right. So, So grihasthas have so much of money, possessions, etc. And still what happens? They have insecurity and they have worries, right? Because it is born out of ignorance, right? Whereas jnani, because he has removed that ignorance, he does not have anything around him, but he does not have insecurity. So what do we know from this? Insecurity and security have nothing to do with our possessions. We can have everything in life and still be insecure. So we can have nothing and still feel secure. So the problem is not external. It is internal problem because of self-ignorance. Therefore, yata chittatma, without worry of the future, shariram kevalam karma kurvan. He does the minimum activity to take care of the body, right? You must remember that there are two styles, which is ajakara vritti and madhukara vritti, honeybee lifestyle and python lifestyle. So minimum he takes care of his body. Now, why should he bother about the body? Isn't it insecurity? Why go for bhiksha? You may have that question. If a jnani takes care of the body, it is not because he is attached to or insecure. His philosophy is that Bhagavan has handed over this body under my care. I am a trustee of this body. Bhagavan wants body to survive for certain number of years. As a trustee, it is my duty to do the minimum what is required and hand over back, right? Not as a owner, nor out of fear, but more as a trustee, right? Shariram kevalam karma kurvan. That's why many a sannyasis are there. They don't go in search of food. If it comes, they eat, right? They don't even treat the body, some of them, when they fall sick, because they permit the law of karma to take its own turn. So sannyasis can afford to do that. Grihastha should not do that. They must take care. As long as he is a family person, he has to take care of his life. There are others dependent on him, right? This is particular talking about a sannyasi. Kilvisham na aapnoti, right? And he does not acquire any punyam or any papam. Even the minimum action he does not produce punya papam. So having renounced all possessions and having restrained the mind and body, he remains free from desires. Engaging in minimum activity required for the maintenance of a body without attachment, he does not incur any sin. Okay. So I'll complete this verse also because it's part of the same topic. Yadriccha labha santushtah. Yadriccha labha santushtah. Dvandvatito vimatsarah. Dvandvatito vimatsarah. Samasidhyava siddhau cha. Samasidhyava siddhau cha. Kritvapina nibadhyate. Kritvapina nibadhyate. So, yadriccha labha santushtah. Whatever comes because of his karma, whatever comes as food, he is willing to accept. When he says bhavati bhiksham dehi, he uses the word bhiksha. He does not specify what food he should get, whether it should be sweet, whether it should be a normal tiffin or what, right? He doesn't do that, right? And also, he generally those days, karapatri sannyasis, some of them used to be called, only with the two palms they will collect the food, right? So they were specifically, the vessel was only the palms, and in few seconds they could make that patram ready and collect the food and move on, right? So now we are not, nobody is, you know, being advised to practice this lifestyle, right? So Bharata Desha is a great place where such people also lived, right? So spirituality actually says that renunciation makes me great, right? But how much I have earned in the materialistic person's view is what we need to think about, right? So materialism says that acquisition is making me great, whereas spirituality says renunciation makes me great, right? So now Sringeri Acharya quotes in this context, which I recently read, that there are three parts to your wealth. Okay, any wealth of yours, very, very strong advice. One part is what you spend on yourself. The second is what you give away in charity. and third is what you leave behind, right? It is a very, very impactful message that he's saying, that A and B belong to you. C actually does not belong to you. You are doing the job of a security guard. A very, very strong message, right? What you spend on yourself and what you spend on charity is what you actually spend on yourself, or you accumulate punya, right? C is, you're just a caretaker, right? So, very, very important point, and I thought it's relevant to, you know, speak about it here. So, in materialism, we talk about how much we acquire, whereas in spirituality, it is more about charity and renunciation. Okay, I think I should stop here. What we'll do is we'll continue this verse in the next class, right? So, let me also, 24th verse is a very, very important verse, which I would like to do in detail in the next class. Purnamada Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vashishyate. Om Shanti Shanti Shantihi. Okay, anybody has questions? Let me just see. You can put your hands up. Yes, GVR.
Namaste, Ji. Question is with regard to your comment and the last part about the Sringeri Shankaracharya's concept dividing wealth into three types. So what does it suggest? Should we leave anything behind, or the best thing for us is to spend on ourselves or give to charity and keep as little as possible as a security guard?
Correct. See, I think very clearly the message is the first part, spending on yourself, has to be to a minimum or according to your lifestyle. Not obviously, if you are turning spiritual, the expectation is that you would have some minimum lifestyle, what you are used to. That is part A. Part B is what we need to definitely give more. And what the Shastras say is, we all, each one of us, know how much we have taken from this world, and we are supposed to return more than what we have taken. Now, when I say return more, it can be in terms of effort, wealth, or, you know, service in different forms. So, each one of us has to take the decision, but the keeping aside for multiple generations, etc., definitely the Shastra did not envisage that at all.
Dhanyavada. Thank you, Ji.
Yeah. Let me see if there's anybody else. Let me just see the question answers here. Yeah. Korakate is modak in Hindi. Yes, correct. That is a nice one. I forgot for a minute. Okay. If it's someone who has said that they've sent a check, okay. I will reply to you. I will also send this message to the Sanskrit from Home founders, and I will ask them to get in touch with you. If someone who kills an animal is thinking it is his part of his duty, will there be any sin? Now, if it is his work, like, okay, let me put it this way. I definitely know an example which doesn't involve sin. So, I'll stick to that example than this, because I'm not an expert on this area. Swamiji has given this example of a hangman, a person who hangs people, right? He says he will not get any sin at all. In fact, it's a different matter how he is able to do it day after day. I have read some articles about a person who has retired after hanging so many people, right? But that such a person will not incur any sin, right? But in the case of animal killing, is it avoidable or not, right? There are a lot of people who are part of that papam cycle also, right? So I don't know exactly how it's viewed. I can come back to you. I will check this out. Okay, a perspective in neuroscience is that the emotions that an organism feels from identifying with the outcome of an action is important in that it serves to teach us about how to change our behavior, a way to learn from our experiences. How can we learn without identifying with the outcome? No, we are not saying we should not empathize or we should not look at the experience or any of these. We are only saying that do not place so much emphasis on the results and have undue expectations and have those violent reactions to it. Rather, you know, be prepared for any kind of result, right? So it's very important that it's good that you ask that empathy factor, understanding outcomes, behavioral changes, all of those, Shastra never says no, right? It is only a question of how we modify our own self to not have expectations out of, or I would say extreme expectations. A job well executed obviously will result in a good kind of result. Now, beyond that, there may be other factors that are working. So that is what I was speaking about, right? Is the Bhagavad Gita divided into three sections of jnana, karma and bhakti? I talked about this at length in the initial sessions. Bhakti is clearly an underlying theme across jnana and karma. There is no karma yoga or jnana yoga without bhakti. So in fact, Swamiji and his lineage and as well as Shankaracharya, all of them talk of, in a way, maybe not in the same words, karma yoga is bhakti yoga level 1 and jnana yoga is bhakti yoga level 2. Somebody else also wants information on donation. It's actually there on the site, but what I will do is I will ask the Vyoma Labs people to send this group a mail with the details so that, you know, whoever wants can use that information. Yeah, here is a question from the students here. Yes, Shiva.
Can you explain more on he never performs any action, though he is engaged in action? Clarity is more clarity.
Uh-huh. He is here. Which verse is this?
20.
Okay, let me just go back to verse 20. There's a question here, a specific question. Okay. Remaining ever satisfied and independent, renouncing the attachment towards the result of action, he never performs any action, though very much engaged in action. It's the same extension of the verse 18, where karmani akarmani pashyet. Basically, because he is not identifying himself with the ahankara, but is identifying with the atma, although the ahankara is performing the action, he is in inaction. He, capital H, which is atma. That is what, whenever you have this, it is the atma which is in inaction. The example of the person sleeping on the bed versus the dream tennis player taking rest and playing again. Okay? Okay, I think I've covered all the questions and I will definitely send you a note on the donation. Yeah, there's one more question here. How can we reflect on Gita's lessons and implement them more effectively in daily practice? Okay, now in the sixth chapter, we are going to go through Dhyana Yoga and the importance of meditation. Maybe in a way I should have talked about it. Okay, it's not too late. I have actually uploaded Shiva Manasa Puja chanting and a script on the site under the section on shlokas. Now, as a preparatory step, what has helped me even before you get into meditation, because depending on whether you are rajasic or sattvic, you may take a number of years to get to meditation, right? So as a first step, pranayama is very, very important. Some yoga practice is important, because if you're running all the time, you have to slow down a little, right? So for that, yoga and pranayama to regulate breathing, it helps. And the third thing is Shiva Manasa Puja. First you chant. If we had the time, we could be chanting this every day, but that's why I just put it up there. Now, once you learn to chant and understand the meaning, it is a mental worship of Lord. So when you're doing something physically, right, or you're chanting through the mouth, then you're doing something actively. Whereas when you're doing it through the mind and you're doing the entire aradhana of Shiva in your mind along with the verses, your mind starts focusing on Saguna Ishvara, that is the Shiva. Then it helps you, first of all, in absorbing this teaching better, and second of all, in starting to do, when you're practicing Nididhyasanam, right, and Vedantic meditation, it will help you abide in your higher nature, which is I am the Atma, who's nothing but consciousness. There are a set of verses, there are a set of English words that will help you actually meditate. So you can start following some of these preparatory disciplines, and when we get to sixth chapter, we will learn more about meditation. Okay? Thank you then. If there are no more questions, we can close. Let me just check the hands here if anybody has put up. No, I think that's all done. Dhanyavadaha. We'll meet next week.